love got stronger.
Live from the Pathway Studios in Johnston proper, you are Live from the Path.
I am working, man. I get things done. Work for the Holy Ghost. Work for the Son. I am working, man. Oh, yes, I am. I am a special agent of the Lamb.
And you're listening to Live from the Path, coming to you from the Pathway Studios here in Johnston proper. Hey, I did hear a guy open his podcast that he was in a town proper. And I said, that is a wild coincidence. Or he's a listener to Live from the Path. I also was at a Christian arts kind of conference a week or so ago. And there were three like kind of well-known either like radio producers or podcast personalities and stuff up there. And someone was asking like, you know, you want to share like what are your favorite podcasts? And I knew as I was sitting there, someone's going to come as a dark horse and say Live from the Path.
Yeah.
And I had committed in my mind that if they said that, I would not wait to vocalize my surprise. I would do it right there in the moment. And I was prepared.
Of course.
And I did not do that. Because they did not say that Life from the Path was one of their favorite podcasts.
You had your shofar ready to go.
Yeah, I was ready.
Hey, were you wearing any Life from the Path gear while you were at this thing, hoping maybe someone would be like, hey.
I did. I brought the sweatshirt, but it was super warm. It was in Tennessee, and so it was too warm. But I did bring my Life from the Path. Maybe I did wear it one of the days, or when I was there.
Hmm.
It did not generate any commentary.
Well,
anyway, what a surprise.
No fanfare.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, two quick things, two shopkeep items. The first one is, last show, I told you, like, what the big reveal was, there's a Live from the Path mobile app, and it's in testing phase. I got to make sure this thing is ready for prime time. Now, I mean, I don't like to collect my tears in a vase and show them off to the world, but I'm going to tell you this. I got one person who said, send me the testing link. I want to see if this thing is working. Now, here's what I know is that when I'm actively producing clips for TikTok, we might be at 1,000+ people on a given episode who will listen to it. When I'm not actively producing clips for TikTok, it's in like the 300 to 400s, sometimes 5. Okay, so you're not in no company listening to the program. Thanks for listening.
Yeah,
I do realize also that like it's very. I often say nobody listens to the show. Don't hear me wrong about that. Like it feels cobbled together. We've been doing it for the same way for 15 years, and to me, it feels like I'm barely getting away with putting this show on. Please don't hear me to say I don't super appreciate you guys listening. I know there's more people who listen than I kind of. That I mentioned, and I really do appreciate that. If not, actually, still being slightly surprised that you're doing so, and so don't hear me wrong about that. It's more self depreciation because it feels like we're getting away with something a little by putting the show on. But anyway, that's the positive of the sandwich. The baloney part, the criticism is that you did not volunteer to test the Life from the Path mobile app.
Yeah.
Okay. So if you're interested in it, okay, and maybe this is you going, nobody wants that crap, which is fair. I would understand.
That's legit. That's legit.
Yeah. That's understandable. But anyway, 515-517-0085. You can call or text. And if you're interested in testing the Life from the Path mobile app, all I need is your email address. And you got to tell me what operating system you're on, because it's a different link, whether you're Android or iOS. But anyway, I would say, like, you got to get to me in the next week or two. Otherwise, you'll miss out on the testing. But the reality is that, like, I can't release the thing until I've actually tested it with more people, especially on the Android side. They just simply will not let you. And so I need your help. If you can hit up 515-517-0085, call or text, and your email address and whatever the operating system is, I'll get you a link. And you just download it, run through its paces. I think the games are fun, And if you like to, you know, keep track of the your favorite shows and that kind of thing, it does all right. It's a pretty good. I use it, actually. I started using it for the Life from the Path over the other podcast app.
Yeah, I agree. I use it today.
Yeah. Okay. Second thing, I told you at the same time that I had like a really the second big reveal, and it might be a few weeks until I can reveal it. And I do have it for you this week. You are going to have to wait till the end of the show. But we've released a tune. That the Life from the Path is now officially released a song on all major platforms. Should be available in most of those. I think Spotify's good, YouTube's good, Amazon Music's good, Apple Music I think is also good. But anyway, I'll play it for you to end the show. But we are now officially out on the music interwebs.
It's about time.
Yeah, yeah. It burns hot. It's a great song. So we'll show it to you at the end of the show.
Hmm.
All right. Okay. The premise of the show today is Mike's posturing is, what if we did a show where you weren't relying on the internet?
Which, I mean, I realize the irony as we broadcast on the internet.
For sure.
But I was thinking about it that, like, if we weren't able to pull stories out of the internet, right, and we couldn't source all of our content out of there, can we actually put on a show?
Right. What would we be talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It would look very different.
Yeah, it would. And like some of it, we just before the show was starting, we were kind of talking about this a little bit. Some of the reason, you know, we're interacting with some of the news stories and like some of the goofball lists from the beliefnet.org is like they're platforms of which we get to go. There isn't sometimes a lot of ways of which we can share an experience with you or even with each other. It's like it's not like we're running into like all three of us are running into each other outside of the show. Even like I'll see Mike at church. But like it's not like it's happening all the time. And so some of our shared experiences are like shared events that we've read about or heard about or watched or something. And the same thing is true with you guys. And so that's part of why we do it. Also, like it helps us digest it. And maybe you're getting, you know, maybe it's a unique take. Maybe it's not. But anyway, that's why we do it. But like, I don't always love that either.
Yeah.
And so it's not my favorite place to start. But like, unless we're coming in where it feels like you're coming in hot with some sort of sweet topic, that's what we end up doing, that kind of thing. And then maybe some advice. And so I think what's interesting, we are still going to source our advice, some Dear Life from the Paths. But I think then the question is that like, I don't know, fellas, like what's going on if we didn't have, if it was just us three in the room? And here's the other problem. We often exhaust this before the show starts.
Yeah.
is like, what's going on that's not that? Dan, you recently had it. I think it's maybe wrong to say it was a heart scare because it seemed like it's okay, but like,
yeah.
You had the Fitbit told on you.
Yeah, the Fitbit, I think it was Thursday. I went out and mowed my yard, did a bunch of yard work, blah, 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 a bunch of stuff, getting it ready for winter.
Yeah.
And I sat down that evening and watching television or something. And my little alert says, hey, your heart's an AFib. I thought, I don't even know what that means. It must not be important because you think I'd know it if it's important, right? So yeah. I just kind of, okay. And then the next day I went and did my stuff, did my day. And I mean, a Kiwanis group, we had a trunk retreat at the Miracle League downtown. And all these little kids were coming around and doing that. And I did all that thing. And I came home and it says it again, your heart's an AFib. I thought, man, I should figure out what this is. I wonder if that's like, you know, a serious thing.
Yeah.
And so I jumped on Dr. YouTube some of them were like, oh, yeah, lots of people have that. It's no big deal. And other people were like, oh, you're going to die immediately. And because what it could do is your heart, like the top and the bottom are not pumping in conjunction.
Yeah.
It's just not communicating. They're not playing well together.
Yeah.
And so that can cause blood clots, which could, if it's released, go straight to your brain, cause a major stroke. Okay. So that sounds pretty serious. So, I texted my wife. And I say, hey, by the way, a couple screenshots. This, you know, the heart rate gone from 85 to 180, you know, multiple times during the day. I didn't feel anything, by the way.
Yeah.
No symptoms at all.
Just regular living.
Nothing. Just regular, normal, everything.
Yeah.
And I don't know, 2 hours passed. She hadn't responded. I thought, well, she doesn't think it's anything either. Then I thought, well, maybe she doesn't have the phone. So I text my daughter, who's in the medical field, and I said, hey, this is going on. And I get a phone call about 30 seconds. No, not even. Just real quick.
Yeah.
Hey, are you alive? Can you breathe? Yeah. Are you dizzy? I said, no, I'm fine. Do you feel anything? No. they show up. They were together, and then they show up, and she has a stethoscope. Well,
your daughter totally answered your text message. Your wife's like, meh.
Well, she left her phone in the car, to her defense. And
they were your playing. Dad's complaining again.
That's what I told her. You were looking for the life insurance, aren't you? And anyway, they get me to the hospital, and I'm it's Friday night. Then I'm thinking, I'm just going to sit there, and I'll just go in Monday. And they're like, no, you're going to go in tonight, or we're going to call an ambulance. Like, so
how embarrassing.
I know, like, what's wrong? Well, I don't know. Nothing.
My daughter had to send the medical wagon because I refused to go in.
Exactly. So yeah, they put me on a blood thinner, which will keep the blood clot from doing anything. Yeah. And they said, yeah, a lot of people don't even know they have this, and they have it. You know, it's just really, actually really common. And but then I sat there for 4 days. I was at emergency for 24 hours before they found a room for me. And then 3 days later, they finally did this little 15-minute procedure where they shocked everything and put everything back. And like, well, I was asleep, so I never felt anything the whole time. It was just a big aggravation. There's no, like, life change for me. Like, oh, stop doing this or that.
Yeah.
I'm on blood thinner, which is great. So, I mean, ultimately, it did save my life. But this is kind of a weird thing.
Yeah.
And every time nurse, everybody who came in, you're sure you're not dizzy? I'm positive. You know, any chest pains? Well, these stickers are kind of starting to bother me a little bit.
Yeah. Like,
oh, man. Yeah. So that was fun. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I bet it freaks people out around you more than it freaks you out. Is that right?
Maybe because I had no symptoms. Yeah. I was like, I don't even know.
Yeah.
We had a good friend who actually had this a few weeks ago that was actually a pretty serious deal. And he's all fine now, too. But
yeah.
But if not treated, it's a big deal.
Yeah.
If treated, you get on with your life. Yeah. There's heart. There's no damage. There's no anything. Right. Everything's fine.
Rescued by the Fitbit.
Okay. Listen, try to take this well.
Yeah.
But this is just me thinking out loud. I'm sure I'm going to regret train of thought. But like, sometimes I feel like knowledge isn't great. You know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like we people that would have keeled over with the same thing when they were 75.
Yeah.
And then like we saved them. And then, like, then they get cancer, and then we save them again. And then, like, I don't know, man. The last 15 has been like, you know, I could have just clocked out at 75, met Jesus, and been like, yeah. And
right.
Jesus is like, yeah, they kept hooking you up to stuff. And what do you want me to stop them?
Not this plastic thing walking around. Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I'm sure there's something very, very wrong with what I'm saying. But, like, part of me is like I always go back to my wife's grandpa. Like, the guy just never went to the doctor a day in his life. And then he finally goes because he's not feeling right. And he's 80. And they're like, you got cancer. It's everywhere. Like, it's in your toenails, dude. You know, and he's like, yeah, all right. You know, and then like a week later, he's out.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And like, I totally get the despair from some folks that like you just end up living in a hospital. And it's such a sterile, you know, like flat environment in there most of the time, and I'm like, man, maybe we're just meant to keel over in a field and have, you know, where you pick your last thing of grain and the dog drag you back, and you're like, man,
it's gonna happen one way or another. Yeah.
I mean, I know it's especially if like you have a thing in your life or some people, you know, I totally get it. It's extremely insensitive, and it's definitely not my intention, but like, part of me just want if I had a choice in the way that I went out, apart from like a heroic fire going into a fire or doing something amazing, which I'm sure I would never do. If I could just clock down, you know, just be like, you know what, that's it. Mike didn't go to the doctor his whole life. Turns out if he would have went in for this simple infection, he would have been fine. But his stubborn, lazy butt at 82 took him. I'd be like, I don't know. I mean, I lived a good chunk.
Had a good life.
It's time for me to go meet Jesus now.
I got an event on my calendar on my birthday when I turn 75 that says start smoking. Like whatever attempts to wear myself out has not worked, and I'll accelerate
the situation. Time for me to go.
I asked my doctor. I said, hey, now I have this 20-year plan for retirement. So do I need to alter that? You know, it's just like a life altering thing for me. Maybe cut it back to 18 or something. And she is her dad is 85. Full time farms is 1,400 square acre farm, and he's out harvesting right now as we speak, and he's doing fine. He's had this thing for decades.
Yeah.
It's not going to affect you at all.
Like, you know, I was thinking about farmers today. So I live kind of outside of town. I'm right across the street from a guy who farms all quite a bit of land, and my wife I mean, has been on me pretty solid for a good decade about my lack of exercise. Like, I just am not. And I sit on my butt for a living. Fair enough. I sit on my butt in here. And then I just like to do that. You know, you're doing jumping jacks and you're pumping iron and you're like winding yourself out by what's the thing where you get on the ground and you do the push up and jump back up?
Oh, the burpee.
Oh, for heaven's sakes. Now, so I think about this burpee, right? Because this is what awaits me. I was supposed to get up and start do it this morning. I just have no motivation in the morning. I don't know. I gotta do something different. But like, then I think every farmer I know, this man has not done a burpee in his life.
Right.
He's never going to do a burpee in his life. But every farmer I know is like 80.
Yeah.
They're 85. And I hear I think the part of it is to go, well, like they're up moving for sure. So like some of it is just like the job I have. If I didn't work the job I had and my normal life was moving, but I will tell you the amount of movement a farmer does today is not the same thing they did 50 years ago.
Maybe you should carry a couple 5-gallon buckets around with you. You sit down at your desk and have them full of grain or something. You were going to feed the pigs or something.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Just something
to mimic it. Yeah.
I just don't like, so what I was trying to figure out is like, how can I change my lifestyle so that I can get the advantages of the farmer gets without, he still ain't doing a burpee. I'm just telling you, even if he's like digging a hole, he's putting a post in, he's like chasing a cow down and wrangling him around, he's still not doing the burpee. It's an unnatural thing to do, and I don't want to do it. But I do need to fill the gap some way, because I will sit my butt into the grave, and that does seem like a bad way to go. Like, that's not going out with my boots on. That's going out with my trousers.
A slow fade.
Yeah, like, it ain't go good.
I think it's an odd way to look back at history, right? Because, like, people aren't just that naturally healthy. Like, we are totally soured by movies and stuff. You're like, man, everybody in caveman times was ripped. And, like, all these Romans ripped. You know what I'm saying? Like, everybody's wearing, like, these real revealing, like, armors. And, like, the truth of it is, the point of the armor was to cover every inch of your body. Yeah. They're not like, hey, just so you can check out half my six pack while I'm out there whooping dudes with this 85-pound sword. Yeah. Like, these are lies, you know?
Yeah.
And the lie is that people were in better shape back in the day. They were not, right? They just definitely weren't. But the thing that they had that we, like, we have longer lifespans, that's true. But, like, we lose purpose and intention. Where, like, they had it because it was survival.
Yeah.
Like, you had to have purpose and intention to survive.
Yeah.
And, like, to maintain, like, people, like, you know, were building a homestead. Even if you weren't a farmer, you were a blacksmith or you were the copy man or whatever, you still were in charge of building your own house. Like, you still had to get, you know, someone had to call all the stuff out and carry the bathwater up the stairs after you burned it on the stove. And, like, everybody had common, like, intentionality and purpose just for living, you know, and we don't have that. And so our default goes to entertainment and to taking it in. And so, like, your health, like, deteriorates super fast when you don't have intention and purpose and something to do, you know. And so what's hard is our jobs, you know, like, it does lean more on your brain than it does on your body than it used to. And just like email, it's making promises that it could never keep. Right. Email was this big turn of events where they're like, hey, man, think of how great it is. You won't have to go out to the mailbox. And here we are 40 years later. I'm still going out to the mailbox only to be disappointed. And now they've moved the junk mail from outside to inside. And so I can get rid of it faster. But I still go to the mailbox and see what's up out there. Yeah. It was a promise that it was going to make my life easier. And now I just have two places to look for bad mail.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So, like, it was a promise it was never going to keep. And the same thing's true with all of our massive amount of entertainment options. It's making a promise that this will help you relax more or find more peace or find some kind of rest. And, like, all it does is create more anxiety and trouble. Like, heaven forbid you lose your debit card somewhere and all the stuff that you had that was lined up to pay auto pay starts failing one by one like dominoes. And you're like, how many things did I have tied to this card? Because you keep getting emails like, your internet's going to get cut off. You didn't pay your water bill. And you're like, holy cow, this was all supposed to be easy. And you know what was really easy? Paying with cash. Because I had to go do it, you know?
Yeah.
I think it has way more to do with purpose and intention than it has to do with actual physical labor. Because, like, you thinking about things or even, like, scheming things, like, it's your metabolism's up and running. Like, your brain takes power, too. And so I think it's a real misnomer to, like, we got to get healthy like we were back in the day. Those dudes weren't healthy either. You know what I'm saying? Nobody was walking around ripped like a Greek Roman god here.
Right, right. They're eating two loaves of bread a day and smoking Pall Malls. Like,
yeah. Dude, you used to be able to rip heaters in the hospital. Yeah. These dudes are in there getting heart surgery like Dan, and they're in there like, yeah. Bronson time.
Or outside the, like, all the videos, you'll see, like, dudes smoking outside the delivery room. They're like, they're bringing a new human into the world, and the guy's like puffing carbon monoxide out there.
I think you could go to early America and go, okay, you'd assume those dudes were working. And like, even if you look at old footage or old photos, like, everybody's pretty decently fit. I wouldn't say like healthy, but I would say that like obesity was not what it is today, right?
Yeah.
And so you'd have to go back. People are always like, we go back to this weird caveman diet or like these forestry people that, you know, live on bamboo and instinct. And you're like, they're still not, you know what I'm saying? There's people not living the way we're living. And like, they still got pot bellies when they're 55. You know, it's just, I think it's we're striving for something that doesn't exist.
Yeah. You know, it's babies. Like, my youngest kid is, that guy had a pot belly till he was like 7.
Yeah.
And I tried to tell my wife, I'm like, look, man, he came out. He's the healthiest kid we know. He's not been polluted by anything. Look, man, dude's got a pot belly.
Yeah.
This is the way that you're supposed to be.
Yeah. Yeah. I think
not buying it.
Purpose and intention, like having a thing to do. Like, I've watched so many people retire and they're like, I can't wait till I retire. And they had no idea what they were going to do. And then they were dead within 6 months. Yeah. Like, they just had no purpose. Their whole purpose had always been their job. And so when they finally quit, and said, hey, I'm going to sit on my butt. Well, sitting on your butt sounds great, right? But it's a great, easy path right to the grave.
Yeah.
Like, you have to have a reason to still be here and a purpose and intention to continue on, or your health just declines immediately.
I talked to a guy Sunday who, because I told everybody, well, I still plan to be around another 20 years and working. And he came up to me afterwards and he said, yeah, he retired when he was 80. And now he's 90, and he said, this retirement is just boring.
Yeah.
You can only play so many games or watch so much TV. He says, I hate it. I hate every minute of it, you know. And but now he's not quite strong enough to, like, work or something. He could probably go do a Walmart, you know, cart or something. But he's caring for his wife now. But
yeah.
I thought, yeah, that's kind of my thought. I have nothing about retirement sounds good to me. I don't sit on the beach. I can go on vacation and do it. But sure. I don't want to. I mean, I'm not going to spend my life on a beach sipping on iced tea or something. And
yeah,
I don't tinker with anything. I mean, you know, it's like I want to do something.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That was one of the things. I don't remember when we had Philip Ramsey in here from the Uncommon Wealth Partners.
Yeah.
That was one of the things he was talking about, is that like the notion of retirement isn't a particularly a Christian notion.
Mm.
It's a uniquely American thing. Well, it's not just American, but like it was one of the things where like, you know, your purpose is never going to go away. And one of the things it does is it forces you to go, instead of looking at retirement as like, well, that's when life begins. Like, no way. Like, your life is happening right now. And it forces you to be more intentional with your right now, as opposed to just going, if I do a bunch of crap I don't like and I don't think it provides any purpose in the world, but I'm going to struggle through it until I get to 65, of which then ultimately I can very wealthily perhaps kill myself faster. Like, and that ends up being your situation. And so I think you're right. And it's interesting that you brought that up, because that was one of the things. This is a pretty serial struggle, I think, in my life of thinking about, am I using my time with intention? And I don't just mean that like it has to produce some good. I just mean like I have not read a fiction book in a decade. I was at the Hutchmoot conference, like the Christian arts type of conference. And like every time, this is the second time I've been there with my oldest daughter. And like, it's just so invigorating, because like people are talking about, they're singing and they're talking about literature, and people are like painting and doing poetry. And I don't paint or do poetry. And like, I only like ish some of it. But like, it's, it is energizing to me to like read something that was really well written and that interacted with interesting ideas, and to see people who are really good at their craft and then to hear them tell a story about it. Like, that stuff is energizing to me. And then I go home and I don't do any of that. I don't read it. I used to be a pretty, when I was in like college, I was an English major. I was a pretty good writer. I've been trying to write a devotional lately, and I suck at it. I can't find my words anymore because they're not in there. Mm-hmm. I didn't pour them in. The words that are available to me are dry academic, like, commentary stuff, which isn't like I love that too, actually, but it is imbalanced vocabulary that is at my disposal. And I thought, like, I'm trying to paint with colors I don't have. But it's not like I can't, though. Like, I'm constantly worried that, like, I'm not living my life with an intention. Do I have time to read for 20 minutes? Yes. Yes, I do. I have it. As much as I'd like to try to convince my wife that I don't have time to exercise, that's hog spit. I can do it. And maybe I don't want to commit an hour to it, because frankly, if I was going to get up an hour earlier every day, if I had to choose between a little bit more time reading for fun, reading in my Bible, praying a little more, maybe texting some people and telling them that I'm praying for them, if I had to choose how to spend my hour, I'd choose those four things before I'd choose the burpee. And like, I probably have to find a balance in there. I should be doing all those things. But like, the answer also isn't to just like stuff your day full of all the things. Because if you think, to your point from earlier, if I think about 30 years ago, I do have to pay every one of my bills by looking at it, writing a check, getting a stamp for it. And like, people seem to have time for this kind of thing. And like, I think there is something, without being like a complete Luddite about it, there is something about
About me, Dan.
I am talking about you. Without being like, so the guy, part of the Hutchmoot was started by the Rabbit Room, which was like a collective of artists and things in Nashville, one of whom is Andrew Peterson. He wrote the Wingfeather Saga books. Oh, very good. They're excellent. He's also like a singer-songwriter. And one of the things I got onto Substack like last year after this conference, because I'm like, it's long form writing of thoughtful people. I'm like, okay. And so I got on there, and because that guy was publishing stuff, and then he publishes like, I don't know, a few sonnets for Lent, and then nothing for 8 months. And then a week or two ago, he published something, and basically his commentary was, he's like, I thought this would be super interesting to publish stuff here, but one, it's starting to feel like a bunch of other social media, a bunch of pictures and like reels and crap like that. But he goes, also, like, I don't know, should I be publishing more? Like, why? Do you need to hear what I think very often? Probably not. He's like, is it healthy for me? I'm not sure if it is. And he goes, I also don't want to contribute to, is it healthy for you? Like, you shouldn't be on here every day looking to see if I wrote something. And so he's like, I'm going to keep it for now, but just know that, like, don't be on here looking to see whether I publish something. It's probably not good for either one of us. I'm like, that's probably right. And so anyway, I probably had the same struggle for like a decade of trying to, of feeling like I could be satisfied at the end of the day that I used my time wisely, and not meaning I just packed it full of like all the accomplishments. It means, can I feel like I, with what God gave me, I dabbled in and shared and prayed over and interacted with and like was satisfied at the day. Now, some of that's gratefulness. Sometimes I, like, if I'm not grateful at the end of the day, that's actually more of a heart problem. Maybe I just need to be more grateful for some of these things. But also, I haven't quite figured out what to, what do you cut? What do I need no visibility into? I read all kinds of news. And we've talked about that on the show before. Like, maybe I could take that in less, but it also actually sets me up to be able to speak to things where like, we're not taking it in right. But I don't know, like maybe we should not care what I think about that so that I can stop thinking about it.
Yeah.
That may also be true.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Some of that I think is really, I don't know. Like, I was just thinking about like the retirement thing, and I thought, you know, the thing that scares me more than like work retirement is like retirement out of youth ministry. Mm-hmm. Like, I know that I have to go at some point. Like, I'm just too old, and that's going to be true. But like, every time my wife and I have talked about it, I'm like, I get super scared. I'm like, what else do we do? Mm-hmm. This is the thing that I've always done. I don't know how to do anything else, and like, maybe I could talk to college age kids. And she's like, Mike, you're not listening.
Like, that's like 2 years older. That's
like, he's like, not the point. After like, and it's not like there's like a hard age where God's like, you're no good talking to youth. Right. But like, especially in youth ministry, it kind of matters. You kind of have to be able to be in some kind of close, you know, proximity. And now you're just a wise sage of a man, and you know, you're not like a youth minister anymore or whatever. Yeah. And so like the work thing, like the everyday 9-to-5 stuff, I'm like, I don't know, I'll do that forever. I'm not super worried about that part. But like it literally freaks me out to think of the day when God's like, you're not going to do youth ministry anymore. I'm like, well, I mean,
yeah, what's your kingdom job?
What am I,
yeah.
what are we going to do? You know, yeah. She's like, I mean, maybe we'll mission, or maybe we'll, you know, help with orphanages, or maybe we'll go to retirement centers, or she goes, maybe we'll help families. Yeah. I'm like, you're just saying things. What happens when we're out of the youth, woman? And like, I almost shut the conversation down. I'm very blind to it, and I'm very stubborn about it. Yeah. I'm like, I don't want to think about this day. I don't want to know about it. I don't want to think about it anymore. I just want to be able, you know, like when my youngest graduates high school, I mean, she's going to stop bringing her friends. And then I'm like, now, how am I supposed to get kids to show up at this thing? I don't even have anybody to say, hey, we should go to this.
You're
YouTube
just a now. Creepy old guy saying,
I know.
Here.
And I'm like,
I've got candy.
I'm like, it's got
I've got candy
and soda. Don't you all still? And here's the thing, that kids don't even like soda anymore.
Oh,
like I didn't set it up. I help with a youth initiative in Pleasantville, and they do dances and stuff. And like, we go help, you know, and like, them kids drink all the water. And I'm like, there's Baja Mountain Dew, boys. Who wants some? They're like, is there any water left? I'm like, what's wrong with you people? Like, this whole table is full of Little Debbies and fun. And they're like, you got any fruit leather?
Do you have
and
any
water?
Carrots?
I'm like, you freaking kids, I don't understand you. I'm on the way out already. That's freaking me out.
Dan, did you have that, like, I don't know, like, there's been interesting stuff that's opened up for you, I think, like, in this part of your ministry experience, mm-hmm. but, like, I don't know, prior to that, did you have any anxiousness related to that, or wonder, like, what was it going to be like?
I figure there'll be something.
Yeah.
You know, I thought, I mean, in the back of my head, oh, I'll write, not that anybody cares, you know, but I would write, you know, yeah. But even now I say, okay, I have a 20-year plan. I don't know how long I'll be doing what I'm doing now. I'd like to do it a long time, but I could have an AFib next week and stroke, you know, but you know, so, you know, I also understand that limitation. So I've told some guys that are around me in the church here saying, I want you to tell me when I'm no longer effective here, because I probably won't recognize it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, it's like every athlete that's like, oh, I'm great, you know, and it's like, Michael Jordan, go ahead and not play baseball. You know, that didn't work. So they have permission to like say, hey, dude, maybe it's time to kind of look differently, you know, and at that point, well, I'll do something different. I hopefully here, you know, there's all kinds of different things within this congregation that missions and elderly stuff. And
I just don't want to go out to pasture.
No, you know right, right.
Like, I just don't want to be like ineffective.
I mean, John,
anymore.
The apostles like sitting at Patmos, you know, being boiled alive. And I mean, like he, the old guy and there's like...
Yeah,
he's still writing Revelation.
Yeah.
So, you know, God has something for us. If you have a pulse, you have a purpose. And I think that's we just
come on.
Yeah. Come on, preach it, brother. then we'll figure out what it is, you know, at the time when it's time to know.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, it's a good point, not to land super heavy on you, Mike, but like like if God has brought you this far, who are you to believe that he won't continue to find, like,
yeah.
He's not going to give up on you, so what, like...
What were you doing before youth?
Yeah.
Something.
Terrible things, Dan.
Yeah.
It was
yeah.
prior to me being saved by Jesus.
Someday you'll look at this and say, this is terrible.
Yeah.
No, maybe not.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I do think about that, though. Like, who... There's a humility in going, who wants to listen to me keep talking 10 years from now?
Right.
I barely think like you, and I'm suspicious of people that listen to me talk now for right reasons. And so like so I think that's fine, except for if your supposed humility translates into God, I'm not open to like doing whatever it is you send me to do. And presuming that like, if you sent me, I must be the right person.
Yeah.
And even if it's just the right person in the right moment, like you're always going to find, I find this in just talking to other people who are in ministry. The right guys are like, I don't know, aren't there better guys? I'm like, yeah, probably.
Sure.
But they're not here. They're not friends with the people you are. They don't run into the experiences that you do. They don't run a hymn sing. Like, we can talk about this in a second, but like they don't run a gathering in Pleasantville, Iowa, where just a real smattering of folks shows up to listen to people singing Jesus tunes. And so like, I don't care how great some other pastor or youth guy or just group of Christians are, like they're here. And I have to trust that, like, whatever situation that has Dan pastoring at Pathway Church and me pastoring a house church and Mike at a like a youth group in Pleasantville, Iowa, that, like, we must be the right dudes for the situation because we're here. And I feel like if it was wrong, God would have made it very clear. And faithful people would have been able to step out of it. And so it is interesting. Mike, talk to me just a little bit about, so there was the hymn sing was Sunday.
Yeah,
so just
Saturday.
Saturday, so just 2 days ago. What was that like? How many years?
I think we're on six.
Okay. So it's been 6 years since you've done this. Maybe remind for folks who have not heard this, because you've been to the hymn sing, you probably heard the story, but like, tell us why you started it, and then, like, I don't know, how is it feeling 6 years in? Like, what is it, how do you think about it?
So, like, when we got our house in, we were looking for a house, we were living with my wife's parents at the time, and, like, I had gone through some, like, being laid off, you know, and so I lost my job, and then I got another job, and it was time to go, you know? And so, like, we found this house in online or whatever, and we're like, okay, we can go look at it. It's pretty close, you know? So we drive out to look at it, and, like, for half hour, 45 minutes, an hour, like, we can't find this joint anywhere. I'm like, man, this must not be the place, you know? Like my wife and I were both following Jesus at the time. Like, we had kind of dedicated our lives to God, and we're like, yeah, maybe this just wasn't the one. And so we're driving back from looking for this house, and we stop at this intersection, and like there's this run-down joint that looks like ain't nobody lived there in like 3 years. I'm like, what's that place cost? This looks like this, but we can afford this joint. And so we stop by, and like it's abandoned. And so like I MacGyver the lock open, like, and it works too. You can like put your ear up to this realtor lock and hear the clicks or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
So I click my way in. And like the carpet's gone, the mice are running the place. And I'm like, this is looking more and more affordable the longer I'm in here. Half the floor is missing in one half of the house. I'm like, hot diggity dang. And so long story short, it's like a house with like 9 acres that comes with it. And the place had been like repoed by the bank. And like, it was cheap. It was really cheap. And we could afford it. And even I could afford it and then take out a little bit extra to like fix some stuff up so we could, our family could be here. And so I'm like, man, this is just such a blessing. I have zero reason to have 9 acres though. And so I'm like, well, I was talking to my wife and I'm like, we got to figure out how to like dedicate this place to God. Like that we have to use it for his purposes. And so like, because of that, we decided to do like a hymn sing every year. Well, we decided to do it the first year. So we do it the first year. There's like, I don't know, 25 people, a bunch of burnt hamburgers, and like 3 people leading worship. It's me, Ben, and Jared, who used to be the worship leader here. And it was okay. It was fun. Like 25 people showed up, and we had a good time. It was great. And then we started it was in the middle of summer. It was too hot and gross, and it was daylight, which kind of ruined it. So we're like, let's move it to fall, and let's try it again next year. And so like, whatever, here we are 6 years down the road, and there's like, there's all kinds of people at this thing, and it's super awesome. There's like, I mean, it's north of 200 people show up. Everybody brings food, and like, I get a band together, and like, Ben will run sound, and I got a bunch of youth kids that are like doing background singing and playing instruments and stuff, and my own kids are helping, and like, the night turns out that it means a lot to people, right? Like, they get a chance to like just sing and be outdoors, and like we got lights all strung up, and we offer a time for people to come up and talk about like what God's been doing in their life, and then I get to share my stuff. You know, it's almost like a how the year went, you know, thing, and how good God is in the Foose life, you know, and so like I get to talk about that every year, and like it's just a really great time. And like, we've met a ton of people in the last 6 years. And so like people who, you know, we don't go to church with, or most people who don't even know Jesus, they're just like, yeah, we'd love to come out. And like, it's a really good time, you know, and it's pretty well attended. I tend to have a hard time getting worship leaders to help me, which is super weird. Like, they're super busy all the time, and they're like, they can, so I always end up with like a amateur band, and they're always awesome. Like, they do a really, really good job. So anyway, like, it's been a great way to continually like turn the place over to God for a night and just spend a night worshiping and whatever. And so like, it's been really, really fun. I tell you, the hard thing is though, is like, if you have a different collective of Christians coming together, figuring out what songs to play is tough.
Yeah.
Cause like, you go to church to church to church, and like, what's a normal, regular, we sing this song all the time. This church ain't never heard of, you know, like, and so like, it takes me a really long time. And like, I have to pray a lot about it to be like, God, I don't even know what songs to play, you know, cause like people have a hard time worshiping to songs they don't know. And so like, sometimes I'll leak the playlist ahead of time and be like, yeah, Here's what we're doing. If you're one of those people that wants to know, take a listen to these before the thing fires up. So you feel like you can hands up, close your eyes, you know, worship.
Yeah.
And other people like, no, I want to be surprised. Because then a song will come on and you just feel like this big Jesus hug happened to you because you didn't know this was coming and it's like your tune or whatever, you know. So anyway, we just got done doing it on Saturday and it was for the first 5 years, like every year the weather's been really dicey. And every year, just about 5:30, God calms down the wind, the projector screen stops blowing over and falling apart, and it's just a peaceful, calm night. And it's been true every year. There's been rain in the forecast, 25, 30 mile per hour winds, which will knock the projector right over, and like God just calms it down. And so the same thing was going to happen this year. I looked at the forecast. I'm like, oh, man, this is going to be bad. It's going to be windy, and maybe it might rain a little bit. But I'm like, look, we're working on the principle that God does what he wants. So like we're not rescheduling, we're not canceling. And the day came and the Lord did not quell the wind. And it was windy and it was cold. And I'm like, it was super weird kind of because I'm like, I God could definitely shut this wind down. And I put it out like on our Facebook post. I'm like, look, God always calms down the wind. We're not canceling. I didn't promise he was gonna calm the wind down. Yeah. I just said he always does.
Yeah, yeah.
And he didn't. I mean, it was knocking stuff over. The projector ripped and like lost all of its air. A big glass of water tipped over and spilled all over the piano. And I think probably ruined it. Like it was a night. It was kind of wild. But like people stuck around and everybody was worshiping. And like it was cold and it was windy and it was super fun. And then like somebody yelled from the crowd. I'm like, I prayed about this wind. I'm not exactly sure what's going on right here. And like someone's like, fresh wind, fresh fire. And I'm like, fresh wind, fresh fire. Come on. Okay, this is what we're going to do. So anyway, it's really a fun, like it's a fun night. And like it goes, like on my perspective, it goes by really fast, right? There's like weeks and weeks and weeks of prepping and like writing song lists and like getting a stage put together and lining up people and food and all this jazz. And then the night comes and like, I miss most of it. Cause like, I can't hear the people worshiping. Cause like I'm singing into a microphone. I can't hear people singing. And like, I don't get a chance to talk to very many people because I'm busy like getting stuff all ready for the whole thing, you know? And like the night goes away and I just have to wait for people to tell me what it was like later. And it's super weird on an event like that. Cause like, it means a lot to folks, but like, in the moment, I miss it. You know, like I miss the whole thing. I just kind of get the wrap up at the end of what people, like how much it meant to them. And so like, it's really a really fun thing that we continue to do. And like, I thought about that in the same vein that I thought about youth ministry. I'm like, when am I too old to do the hymn sing, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, when am I that 60-year-old dude and his buddies up there? And they're like, man, you know what I'm saying? They're like, they got to go. We need some fresh talent in here, you know? And like, when will God bring someone to replace me? That's how I feel about youth ministry. That's how I feel about hymn sing. That's how I feel about a lot of things that God has me doing. The thing's not going to drop. I'm not holding anything up. But like, when will God bring someone to replace me? And will I graciously be able to look at it and go, you know, if I just got to do hymn sing for 5 years, that would have been enough. If I got to do it for 1 year, that would have been enough.
Yeah.
You know, like, can he, like, will he change my heart in a way that goes, you didn't stop the wind that 1 year, Lord, but otherwise you've been really gracious in our having this thing. And now you're replacing me with, you know, this guy. And yeah. And like, they're going to do it at their house and it's not a thing for you anymore. And I'm like, I hope that I'm gracious when that time comes. And the same thing with youth ministry stuff.
Yeah.
Go ahead. No, I was going to say, I don't know if this has changed in me, but like, if you think about, so the wind really kicks up, starts to like sprinkle and rain a little bit towards the end of the thing. And so like, you know, there's just like a mad dash to like collect all the stuff and like run it into the garage and try to keep it out of the rain. And like, what another fun, cool story. Like that, the thing you're going to remember it was so rough and like everyone was hauling around. Like the power of, again, of shared moments and shared memories. And like, some, if you can think of them that way, it doesn't matter that it, you know, you had to cut three songs. It
yes.
doesn't matter yeah, that yeah. like it was a real mad dash because you remember the mad dash. And the reason it's fun, if you're doing it by yourself, it sucks. But if you and, you know, 30, 40 other people are trying to mad dash, get stuff out of the rain and yeah. like we're all we're all tired out from moving speakers around, like that's a great memory
it
and
is.
A great shared experience and like totally worth it.
Yeah. Were you guys here when we did an outside worship at the school and it started pouring down rain and we had to
bring everything in real quick, and we basically just had church on a stage, like the big middle school stage.
Mm-mm.
Okay, it must have been before you guys. It was kind of the same thing. We had the curtains up, we had all the stuff. It was like, oh, we're going to do a great outside event. It'll be the best thing ever, you know? And just a horrible Sunday morning storm. And there's like, but it was a blast. It was one of my favorite worship services ever.
Yeah.
A Pathway.
I had a guy that, like, he doesn't follow Jesus. Like, I know him, but he doesn't follow Jesus. And like he had said, he said, I can't remember the last time I was that comfortable anywhere. And like, like what an awesome environment, you know, like just to have a group of people who love Jesus, you know, all singing and worshiping, and like someone who, like, he knows these folks, you know, but like, it's not his religion. It's not his gig. It's not what he does, you know, and like to feel completely comfortable there, you know, that it's just a bunch of people singing worship tunes and eating food and hanging out. I'm like, yeah, I will go through whatever time and talent and expense this thing costs to make sure that this shows up. Like every year we invited, in fact, Jared was in here from Sheepgate three weeks ago. And so we invited the Sheepgate guys out, and like, they showed up with a van full of dudes. And I had a chance to talk to a couple of them, and it was really good. Like, and it's always this way. And so I met, like I said, during the event itself. And I actually was talking to my daughter about this because she was singing as one of the background singers. And she was like, I feel really bad, 'cause I was kind of worried, like how I was sounding and how I was, you know, singing or whatever. And I said, I want you to not be too hard on yourself. 'Cause like every once in a while, like it's really different sitting out in the crowd and worshiping, you know, like, and this is the same at your church services too. And then like, someone's got to be playing instruments and someone's got to be singing in the band, and, you know, and it's a different experience for you. So like, you think that you can get up there and just get lost in the worship but like, your brain's got to be like, hey, there's a chord change coming up, or hey, the tempo is going to stop, or like, hey, we got to do, like, you're doing something too. So it's, you can serve God in an obedient way, and like, by just doing the thing that he built you to do. And like, you don't have to be like lost in it. And like, I think you should, like, being lost in worship is awesome. And I think, like, especially for worship leaders or people who play in worship bands, you got to get off that stage every once in a while. Like, you need to be out in a crowd and just sing, because it's good for you. You know, but like, when you're not doing that, and when you're doing the thing that like God created you to do, it's not like, you know, Ben and Dan preach every Sunday, and like, it happens sometimes, but like, you know where you know what you're going to say, and you're not like instantly convicted by the thing you said. You were convicted 3 days ago when you were working through it, you know? And so the thing that God was using to you know, have you talk to people about, you're not like reconvicted, and then God's not like, be in the moment. You know what I'm saying? And like, worship's kind of the same way.
Yeah.
It's like, you're not just going to like start weeping all of a sudden just because you're playing the keyboards, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's fine. I actually think that, we are well served by honesty. I think we're well served by, this is not a surprise, I suppose, coming from just stuff we've talked about in the past, but like there's just no reason for a facade on any of these things. Like, one of the things that people connect with the most is not, let me tell you a quick story. So I was at, I was at this conference, and one of the sessions was like, I don't remember what it was called. It was like three radio hits and a TED talk, like maybe like thinking about how your church service is whatever set up. Like, this does not really apply to me. In my environment, it's just not that. But like, I was interested in it. And so they're sitting there talking. The guy that was doing the discussion had been like an industry dude with the Christian music industry. And he's like, I don't like most of these tunes, to be honest with you. He goes, I'm not sure they're really great tunes. He said they have themes where like the vast majority of tunes that are coming through, I'm probably going to get these wrong, but it was basically like the topics are God is good. God is for me.
God fights for me.
God fights for me. But against whom is probably a good question, right? And he goes, those are the three things. And he's like, and these are the radio, like, this is what people are hearing on the radio, and they'll show up to the worship guy and be like, hey, I want to hear the hits that I'm hearing on the radio. And it was interesting because he's like, that is, those three topics, although right in some ways, are wholly inept to be the entire songbook of the church. Like they're not our shared experiences. Even if you look at the Psalms holistically, we're not talking about just those things. Like what do we reach for when we're weeping? What do we reach for when, like, during trying times? What do we reach for in repentance? Like, and so the risk is that, you know, like you kind of cater to what is a very cultivated music industry. And so the interesting part of that is I'm listening to this go on, and like it's a room full of pastors and worship leaders. The pastors are worried about that they're, you know, just passing off the, like, how do I improve my church service? And the worship guys are in there, they're all like nodding their heads and like, yeah, yeah. And they're raising their hands, they're talking, like, well, you know, we're in a pickle because people want to hear the stuff that's on K-Love. And if they don't, they're going to go to the church down the street. And I'm listening to this, and two thoughts occurred to me at the time. The first one was, and I sent this to Mike, is I am very grateful. I don't recognize this situation in my environment. The songs, the stuff that Mike, because Mike will lead the worship, and like their songs, he knows the people in the room. Like, you know your people. And so you know what they're working through, you know what we're dealing with culturally. And like, I can think of Ren Collective's Weep With Me, and we've done it. And like, there's, and like, I just don't have this. I don't listen to a bunch of K-Love either. So like, maybe I'm just the wrong guy, but like, yeah. I that's not my experience in my church environment. That is not the experience I'm having. And I know it's not happening everywhere, but I do know that like, it is happening a lot of places just based upon listening to this room. And so I thought, one, I was very grateful for that, because I'm like, we're not running into this. But there's also things about my environment that don't, there's no pressure to it either. But secondly, I'm thinking about these pastors and worship leaders in the room. I'm like, why are you agreeing to this? Like, what pressure are you succumbing to where someone's like, I want to hear the hits? I'm like, I mean, sometimes what we're talking about, the hits make sense. And then, but like, I don't not teach on whatever's coming up because someone goes, you know what I'd really like to hear? Jonah 3.
And like, that really resonates.
And like, I'd be glad to talk with you about Jonah 3 if you're real excited about it. But like, I don't decide what I'm going to talk about and not talk about just because this is the thing that you like. It's like, it's okay to know that. But like, there was something that was depressing to me, because like, these people are talking like they're hamstrung. Mm-hmm. Like, well, this is what people are expecting. I'm like, I don't, are you the pastor or are you not? Are you leading people in this way or are you not? And like, I understand there's a pressure to it. Going down the street is sad, for one. You also have to keep the lights on. Like, I get it. I get that there's something to that. But just like the kind of the shared lament in this space around, we feel like we have to do this thing and like we have to give the what feels more TED talkish. I'm like, you should just stop, like, right now. If it's not right, if it's not the thing you should be doing, then like, lead it. And if people go, and if it means that your building gets smaller or your gathering's not the same thing because that filtered people out, I'm sad about the people not being there because they're missing out on the true thing that you're actually doing. And so it was just an interesting reaction to see a lot of these folks, some in like very big congregations, who like felt this pressure. And again, it's not to say that like, it's not that your sermon can't have motivation in it. Jesus is motivational at times. It's not that you can't play the hits. There's a lot of really good songs that are popular, and they're popular for good reason. They're great. The words are good. They're a salve. It's fantastic. I was surprised. I was surprised to hear that is that what was going on? And so the reason I say all that is I think about things like the hymn sing, and maybe this is encouragement to anybody who's in like that type of position, but like, the things that people really connect with are the things that are connecting. Like Mike did a song, there's a song called The Watchman by Josh Garrels. And like, I think even if no one had heard that, because I think most people probably hadn't heard that song.
Yeah.
But the thing that that song does for you then starts to help people connect with it, not because they love Josh Garrels or they even particularly love the tune, but then now they relate a heart that goes, I just want to follow Jesus well, and I'm waiting for things, and it's not always easy to wait to see God do things that I really hope he's doing. And then that connects to them, and then that song becomes a salve to that for them, even if they wouldn't have normally pulled it out of the player.
Yeah.
And so, like, I guess the point is to say, there's things that tingle your ears and sometimes twist, like get your heart in flutters a little bit. It's the AFib of the worship community. But like the things that I feel like connect with people are like Dan's lived life and then how he relates to the way God moves in scripture. And then, like, sometimes that's the thing that helps open something up to them in ways that, like, the story itself didn't. They saw humans in it. Because there's a reason God tells stories through human interactions. Like, we didn't just get Hammurabi's code dropped down. We get even the Torah in Leviticus, which is the driest book ever. You get those always in the context of God's people tried to do a thing. They screwed it up. So God had to give them more direction to help refine that they're seeing it wrong. And then you get another vision of God's people doing a thing. And then they screwed that up and they got more. Like, even that was a narrative. We just don't have a dry God. So it's connected to human experience. And I think that's where the something like the hymn sing efforts and like just even the normal church services, like the human connections and how they relate to the things that are going on are the things that they actually remember and I think are very powerful.
I actually like I started a like a subset youth group called Hope on Offense.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like these kids that like they love Jesus and I'm like there's regular everyday youth group and then there's us. Mm-hmm. We're the SEAL team of this operation. Yeah. And so we meet secretly in the winds and like we set it up. We're like, what did I say? There's three things that I set them up to do. And it was actually a thing that God had put on my heart while I was on vacation. And it was just before my friend had passed away in a car accident. And I was all psyched up about it. And then the car accident thing happened and I kind of got sidetracked. And so in the middle of my laments and my sadness, like I remember this thing that God had me doing. And I'm like, well, I'm tired of playing defense. So we're going to go on offense. And so like I got these group of kids together and I said, all right, guys, here's what we're going to do. We're going to operate on three principles. One, we have to pray like the Holy Spirit is actually active in doing something. Like you believe that the Holy Spirit moves in people's lives and does work. And you need to pray that way. I'm not saying that you can't pray for your volleyball match, but I would prefer if we're praying for Jesus to show himself to the opposing team. That's what we're praying on. Stuff like that, like in the streets. And then the second thing was it was burning their stuff in the streets. So like I related it loosely to some scripture between wives and husbands about like basically God not listening to a man's prayer who is not being serving to his wife. And I said, look, that's not prescriptive amongst all of scripture, but I do like it for this example. So I'm going to say this. If you have some things that are blocking your prayers from being heard, you need to burn them in the streets right now. And you need to find a guy. So everybody was in charge of praying consistently like the Holy Spirit actually moves and works, burning their sin in the streets so we can get past our gunk and get to doing the thing God's got us doing. And the third one was everybody's got to take somebody to coffee. And I showed up with a pile of gift cards and I go, here's $10. And if you burn through this one, come get another one. But like everybody's got to take somebody to coffee and it needs to be somebody that you would not have normally taken to coffee. And here's the thing is you're not going to talk about Jesus unless they bring it up. You're just going to, here's the two criteria was, is one, you're paying with this gift card. And two, at the end of the thing, I want you to ask them if you can pray for them. If the conversation in between all of that is just, how are you? How's your family? What's going on in your life? And Jesus doesn't come up once. We're going to let the Holy Spirit control that. But at the end of the time, I want you to ask them if you can pray for them. That's good for you and them because you need to get used to asking people if you can pray for them. And like they're doing it and it's awesome. And like they're nailing it. And I'm running out of gift cards. I've had to resupply twice.
Nice.
I get more gift cards. And people are like, can I take somebody else? I'm like, yes. They're like, can I take a person I already took? I'm like, yes. Yes, you can do that. Can I take my friend? No, you can't take your friend. They already love Jesus? Yes. I'm like, no. You spend the...
they're buying their own coffee.
Yeah, you get your... That's coming out of your pocket. That's coming out of your pocket. But like, it's been super awesome. Like, I never thought that it would be just as energizing to me as it is to them to watch them... like pray, like the Holy Spirit actually, like even adults are terrible about this, you know? And so like, we're not on offense. We're not praying on offense. We're praying for like, keep sickness out or like, don't let peace be disrupted. And God's like, yeah, I don't know. I brought a sword. So you guys do whatever you want, but we're on offense.
Yeah.
You know what I'm like? We got to get on with this thing. You know, it's super, but like the whole reason I brought that up is because I feel like if maybe there's a thing that maybe God is walking me through, it's like, is churches built on connections and validation through changed lives of other people. And hot dang, if I like, I don't know that people are like, here's the program. Here's the discipleship program to run them through. Or here's the class. And I'm like, you guys, look, meet a guy, get to know that guy and go, that guy's life is different. Talk to me. Do you know what I'm saying? Like that, like I don't know. There was a, in fact, Bethel put out a tune like, we're going to have another Pentecost. I'm like, I don't know. You already got one Pentecost. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, you, who's calling another one? I think God gets to call.
Trying to organize a Pentecost.
Yeah. I mean, this showed up when the Holy Spirit showed up, and you're like, we should do that again because this other stuff is real, it's real grating. It takes forever. You know what I'm saying? And so, like, in fact, the guy, remember we were talking about this a couple of weeks ago, the guy that just Holy Spirited people.
Oh, yeah.
And like, they're like, yeah, I got to turn my life over to Jesus. And for a week, I'm like, man, that's so easy, Lord. This having coffee and Bible studies and like dragging it out for years while people still make bad decisions, like, that really sucks. Can't we just show up and be like, wham, here's the thing about your past. Oh, Jesus knows me to my soul. I repent. You're like, wow, that's definitely the way to go. This church service business is stupid. We should definitely just one attack people once at a time. And so like, that wasn't really part of the Hope on Offense planning, but after I saw this guy do it, I'm like, man, Lord, is this a possibility? Because this seems way better than this putting on a service and hope someone wants to talk to you later. You're like, that sounds like it kind of sucks. But long story short, like, of all the things that, like the worship leaders are sitting in this thing, and, you know, and the pastors are sitting in this thing, and like, will you just shepherd the people that God's put in front of you? You know what I'm saying? Like, look at your room, pray about your room, pray about them, pray about the song, pray about the sermon, and then go do it.
Yeah. Hey, you've been listening live from the Path. Thanks for hanging out with us here. We appreciate it on the no internet week here on the program, the Luddite Revolution or Mike's home base.
I love it.
All right, hey, if you got any thoughts on I don't know if you have any reaction to any of that stuff we're talking about, you can hit us up on the Live from the Path complaint line, 515-517-0085. Call or text, and we'd love to hear your thoughts, feedback. Any other smattering of information?
Hey, dude, you got to stop using the word smattering.
Why?
You did it last week, and now you've probably used it three times today.
I'm caught on it.
It's too much.
It's going to take another. It's going to take another week to get rid of it.
Hey, do you want to run through one advice?
No.
We're out. No internet.
Yeah, I think we're gonna. Well, okay, let's do one. I'm very hard pressed to say. Like, I feel like that's the one thing that's been really consistent at Life from the Path, and we've always done a Dear Life from the Path.
That is true.
Okay, let's do one.
Hold on. I had a really good one. Now I lost it. Oh, no. We're going to read this one instead.
Okay.
All right. Ready? Dear Life from the Path. I text my older sister often. Last month, I sent her a long message consisting of information and chit-chat. To my surprise, it was not answered by her, but by her daughter, who I am not fond of. My message was not meant for her daughter, and although the information it contained was not critical or embarrassing, I am offended that my text was intercepted and answered by someone other than the intended recipient.
Yeah.
Am I wrong here? The entire situation is now blown way out of proportion, and we are no longer speaking.
Ooh.
Please advise.
Wait, this is a friend or a sister?
Sister.
This is not a sister, and so she's mad at her niece.
I don't like my niece.
Yeah, I guess she's not a fan of the niece. That's
rough times.
Yeah, it's hard to be on your side, lady.
I don't think your phone is your issue.
Yeah, I think you got some different problems here. I'm going to tell you what, like, my kids will sometimes read my text messages.
Yeah, that's
holistically,
just
I don't care.
Yeah.
Unless I'm texting my wife. It's generally not about them, but it might be about something else.
Yeah.
And you might learn something you don't want to know.
Yeah.
And that has happened. And they're like, Dad. I'm like, stop reading your mom text messages. Yeah. Why don't you stop being so nosy? It's none of your business. What I say to my wife.
I think it's good to know that someone might not be protecting their text messages, across the board. I wouldn't be mad. I would just be, now you're informed. And so just respond accordingly. There's no reason to be upset about it.
You just don't know the context. You don't know how the niece got it. It could have been she walked by and saw mom's phone. Hey, what's going on there? Oh, there's Aunt Margaret, you know? And
yeah.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah, I think if you have a... Once again, like, obviously being in any type of ministry leadership, like, there's certain, like, I don't generally let my kids read my text messages because, like, some of that stuff is not for them.
Yeah.
And sometimes people tell me things that they don't want the whole world to know.
Right.
And so, like, I'm not protective of my phone at my house because my kids kind of know better. But, like, if I got a text message and I see it's from Ben, I'm like, what'd he say? You know what I'm saying? Like, read it to me. what do you say? But if it's from some other people, I'm like, stay out of that. That's not for you.
Yeah.
You know? And so, like, it's slightly, I guess, maybe unfair to, like, feel like your vulnerabilities were broadcast to other people that someone didn't protect you well, you know. But maybe if it wasn't an altogether vulnerable conversation, then they were like, what did Sharon say? You know, if she did a laughy emoji. Okay, great. You know what I'm saying? Like, right. I can't be talking like this all day. And so, like, it feels like it's really situational, just like it is in any conversation. There's certain conversations I'm not going to have in a room full of 5 people, 10, 20 people. I'm like, hey, come talk to me for a minute. You know what I'm saying? And so, like, text messages should probably be treated the same with the same respect, I would guess.
Yeah, but it does seem like an easy hump to get over. Like, someone goes, oh, I didn't know that she was going to look at this. Do you mind? I'm slightly worried about some sensitive thing I may say. Do you mind if she not look at it? And then, so both of you should just easily get over it.
Yeah, right.
Like that, this should not be a major hump. If you're like, and even if you walked away and go, look, your aunt Betty's a little overprotective. Just make sure you don't read if she sends over. Okay. Yeah. Like, it's not like your niece deserves to see the text message or needs it in some way or another. Like, just accommodate. Don't be a turd.
Yeah. And you should stop disliking your niece. What's the matter with you?
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah, there's some deeper family issues there.
Yeah. You don't get a smattering of nieces.
Ben.
You just get one.
Here's the thing. It's like, who dislikes a child? You know, even up to like, even in their teenage years, some of them get a little bit rough.
Sure.
You know, but like, who looks you were a teenager. You know you have no clue how the world works, so you have no idea who you are, and you're trying on all these coats and acting like a fool, and like, if you can't see past this, you're a terrible adult.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you can't look at your own experience and the experience of everybody around you and go, well, I wasn't the same person I was when I was 17 and running my yap and being a jerk. You know what I'm saying? Like, take a couple steps back and get past yourself, you boob.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed.
Okay. Here's Secular's advice. I find it odd that your niece would answer her mother's texts unless she was asked to do it. Did your sister take offense because she felt her daughter needed a defending? Your next step should be to get your sister on the phone so you can talk this through. Apologize if you may have overreacted, but consider what happened to be a warning that when you text, email, or call your sister, it won't necessarily be kept between the two of you. Private communications may have to be face-to-face.
Yeah, I mean, that's the only way to do it, to be honest with you. Get yourself a parking garage and about 11:30 meetup time. If you want it completely protected.
Yeah. I think this is just a problem of the modern age. You know what I'm saying? Like, people always have text messages roll on their phone. And, like, I don't like people being super grabby about their phone because it always feels like you're up to something.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
But at the end of the day, some conversations are private conversations. And if you choose to have them over text message, you should protect people from that. You know, like, they should feel like they're just talking to you. Like, you ever get someone call you and they're like, am I on speakerphone? I'm like, and this happened to me quite a bit, actually, because I talked a lot on speakerphone because I'm usually working. And so I'll just, you know, answer the phone and put it down somewhere and then talk to them while I'm doing the thing. And like, well, it used to make my old boss real mad. He's like, am I on speakerphone? I'm like, yeah. Well, take me off speakerphone. I'm like, I'm not doing that. I'm in the middle of doing something right now. Like, why don't you say stuff that's palatable for the whole environment? Like, be careful who comes in, you know, honestly.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. All right. Hey, you're listening to Live from the Path. We appreciate you hanging out with us this week. Again, thoughts, feedback on the show, or if you want in on the testing of the app, it's 515-517-0085. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to leave you with the Live from the Path world premiere of the Shofar Show Good. And again, I'd like to hear your thoughts on it once we give it a spin. But I'm gonna let the show head out with that. So as you listen to it, just remember, you should be faithful in the means. God will handle the ends. You've been listening to Live from the Path. Show far, show good. Woke up this morning, feeling the vibe. Put on my sandals, it's show far time. Marching round Jericho, 7 days strong. Through my horn, the wall sits so long. Shofar show good, I can't deny. Sound of the ram's horn reaching the sky. From Sinai to Zion, we're blowing it loud. Even Pharaoh's raising a brow. Shofar show good, you know it's true. It ain't just noise, it's holy kazoo. Yahweh's jam band, desert tour dates, topping plagues and shaking gates. Moses on the mountain, tablets in hand, said don't touch the bass or you'll fry where you stand. The lights got rhythm, free
Scott, stop. Throw the shofar, dance and single file. We ain't got trumpets, flutes, or a fiddle, but we'll part your Red Sea right down the middle. No Spotify, no iCloud stream, just a ram's horn and a God-sized dream. Shofar, show good, breaking the norm. Face break powered by a thunderstorm. Rams run scared when they see my face, cause I might just go in a God-sized dream. When the trumpet sounds on judgment day, I'll be front row yelling, let's partay. Gabriel's horn, please, I taught that class. Shofar skills and righteous acts. So if you hear that bleating tone, don't run scared, you ain't alone. We're just praising the God who could, with a horn that goes show good, show good.